and it works.
Yes.
City Council will come back from recess. Let the record show that the mayor has joined the procession. How are you, Carla?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Mayor?
Good. What did we accomplish this morning, and where are we at?
Everything but items 103 and 115.
That's all we have left?
Yes.
Okay, great. 103 and 115, you said?
Correct.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and read the title for time certain, item number 103.
Require an actual physical fitness test as the eligibility requirement for the Portland Police Bureau's health and fitness pay premium.
Okay. We are just waiting for a few colleagues.
Opening remark.
Do you have any opening remarks?
Well, I would just, refresh the council's memory.
That's
since
right.
It's been a couple of weeks and you weren't here at the last meeting, that, you know, last February, the city council did approve a collective bargaining agreement with the Portland Police Association. And one of the clauses in the agreement called for officers to receive a 1% premium if they passed a health and fitness test. It was my understanding and the public's understanding that officers would have to pass a test that tested their actual physical ability to do their jobs, and that this premium was an incentive that would apply to a certain limited number of officers. However, since that contract was approved by council, the contract has since been interpreted to mean that instead of taking an actual physical fitness test, officers are now eligible for a 1% pay premium for simply taking a health and wellness screening or a blood test. And 91% of the union has gotten that premium. So it's become, in my opinion, it's become an entitlement, not an incentive. And I do believe, upon reflection over the last couple of weeks, and I know there will be a substitute offered here shortly, but I have come to the conclusion that personal health is an individual responsibility, and it's not the responsibility of the taxpayers. We can offer wellness programs and things like that, but we shouldn't be paying for physical fitness. So I do not support paying employees to take a wellness test, and I believe this contract implementation sets a bad precedent. I do believe that other employee unions in the city will be asking for the same thing, a raise to take a simple blood screening. And in that context, we can simply not afford to be paying taxpayer dollars for these types of premiums, when many in the private sector are required to take a wellness screening as a condition of maintaining health insurance. So it's ludicrous to me that we are paying $739 for an employee to show up at a Fred Meyer and get a blood test and a BMI measurement. So I know there will be a substitute being offered, and I just want to make it crystal clear that I will not support any premium of this type in any future contracts, police or otherwise.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Commissioner Leonard?
So I'd move the substitute resolution.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the substitution among council?
Yeah, I'd like to briefly explain it. What the substitute resolution does, first of all, and most importantly, is legal. Can be done under the state collective bargaining law. What Commissioner Saltzman is proposing and defending is illegal under the state collective bargaining law and would be overturned not only by the Employment Relations Board, but upheld by the Court of Appeals that the city appealed it there, and will be upheld by the state Supreme Court. It's long established law that on the subject of wages, hours, and working conditions, they must be collectively bargained. There are some states other than Oregon that have attempted recently to change their own collective bargaining laws, but the laws are here what they are. And as a consequence, I developed a substitute resolution that I think addresses Commissioner Saltzman's original concern that the current system being used by the city in order for officers to qualify for the 1% premium isn't what the council intended. What we intended was to actually have a physical fitness test. This resolution directs the bargaining team of the city to develop, if they're going to have any kind of a proposal next time. It doesn't require that there be a proposal for a physical fitness test. But what it does say, if there is a physical fitness test, it actually has to have a physical fitness component, much like what Chief Reese has described to me as the state standard. I think he referred to it as ORPAC, is a test developed by the Public Safety Standards and Training Board of Public Safety Standards and Training that all officers, new officers, have to pass. So it doesn't require a premium be paid, but it does say the resolution, if there is a premium to be offered to the table, it must be offered in conjunction with an actual physical fitness test that officers have to pass to qualify for the 1%.
Mayor Adams, I was presiding officer in your absence earlier. We handed out a different resolution, so the Commissioner Leonard's resolution is being copied as we speak and will be handed out in a moment.
Did I hand out the wrong one?
You handed out the LT2, and I...
Sorry.
Okay. I think it was a test of some kind. But do we have more than... So we need one for everyone.
Or a testament of my life.
Run water does not need a physical fitness test.
I think the mayor was going to rule it out of order.
Sorry. Thank you.
Is there any additional council discussion on the motion to substitute? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to substitute?
Fritz.
I'm supporting Commissioner Leonard's motion to substitute because he just clearly articulated the legislative intent that if there is a fitness test, a fitness incentive in the next contract, then it must include a real test. And the word is if. This substitute resolution does not say that we are going to do any kind of fitness incentive. While I share Commissioner Saltzman's concerns, we know that taxpayers are paying the City of Portland employees' wellness and health care costs. So if we can provide incentives which then reduce costs, that is going to be better for the taxpayers. And I will be looking, should I have the honor of serving in the council at the next contract negotiations, I will be looking at have the current incentives, which are just being given for the biometric screening, was there an improvement from year one to year two? Did that make any difference? And did knowing the biometric results cause changes in behavior? I am also interested in looking at other mechanisms to ensure that all city employees pursue wellness, again, to decrease taxpayers' investments. So with those provisions, I'm supporting the substitute, and I appreciate the work that and this discussion. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
No.
Leonard.
Well, this is a subject that I care deeply about. The job of a police officer is, in addition to being mentally and emotionally very trying, probably the most trying occupation in the city, it also at times is very physically demanding. And what one does not want to happen to oneself, speaking on behalf of a police officer, is to find yourself in the middle of the night alone in a physical confrontation or pursuit, and then all of a sudden, with nobody else around, feel a heart attack coming on, feel some of the life-threatening disease you had no knowledge of coming around. And the best way to correct that is to, in advance, have one of these physical fitness tests we're talking about. The Fire Bureau has been doing this kind of a thing for years, and there have been a number of individuals who were walking time bombs who didn't know that they were one exertion away from suffering some fatal, catastrophic incident physically in their life, but for these exams would not have known and have been caught and treated and lives saved. So that's my way of urging the police association next time to understand that not only will this provision in the contract be helpful for their members to earn the 1%, it's in their interest very much so to go in and have these physical fitness tests in addition to the biometrics, because the body reacts differently under stress than it does at ease. And if they're tested during the process of putting their body under stress, there will be conditions that they will become aware of that they wouldn't with the biometrics. So I very much care that our police officers serve their full time in office as officers and then able to retire, enjoy their retirement. And I think that this program, as envisioned by this resolution, will certainly save lives if it's implemented. So I urge the police union to certainly work to make sure that that their concerns are addressed, but embrace the concept of a physical agility test. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard and my colleagues on the City Council for working with city staff to come up with the substitute. Not being at the meeting where this first came up, I appreciate you working out what I think is a legal and common sense approach to the issue. Negotiations and implementation of the negotiations didn't go exactly as I had hoped, but I think it's important to back up our staff, and I think that if this pay boost option is to continue in the future, it should continue in exactly the way that Commissioner Leonard just described. One last note, it is my opinion that the potential cost of this and the logistics of implementing a world-class training and fitness program for the police bureau, which I know is a goal of the police chief and his team, will be much assisted by an actual training center for the police and for other emergency personnel within close proximity of the city or in the city. So we're working on that as well for council consideration in the future. Aye. So approved. We are now on the substitute resolution. Is there anyone that signed to testify?
I did not set out a sign up.
Does anyone wish to testify? Mr. Handelman, please come forward. Anybody else? All right, this will be our sole. A lot of pressure on you, Mr. Handelman. A lot of pressure. You're speaking for
thank you very much, Mr.
everybody.
My name is Dan Handelman. I'm with Portland Cop Watch. And I testified last year when the Portland Police Association's contract was approved about the fact that what was a result of months and months of negotiations, some of which were public and some of which we found out later were held behind closed doors, was essentially a grocery list, just a list of items not spelled out, and it wasn't very clear what they were. And that came back a few months later in the form of a $65,000 payment to the members of the PPA because there was a disagreement about what the contract meant, and then now it's coming back again because of this disagreement. And I just feel that not enough attention was paid to the contract at the time that it was negotiated and the time it was adopted by council, and we really encourage more public open discussion about what this contract means, and it's costing taxpayers money because we had a list of words and not a fully written out contract for the public to testify about or for you to look at. And since I have a few extra seconds, I just want to add that there were a couple of items that I had pulled off the consent agenda this morning, and I wasn't actually intended to talk about this item, and I had come down to testify on those, and now I understand they're being pulled back to the mayor's office for more work. Just from the point of view of...
So you have to limit your testimony to this item.
I understand.
I have to treat everybody the same. So
but from the point of view of a citizen who comes all the way down here to testify on something and find out it's not going to be heard, it's kind of frustrating, just so you know.
Well, sometimes, I apologize for that, sometimes our less than best work makes it to the city council agenda, and sometimes we pull it back to do better work. So I apologize for the inconvenience. We try to limit that as much as possible. Thank you. All right. Would you please call the vote on the substituted resolution?
Fritz.
Aye.
Mish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I do appreciate Commissioner Leonard's substitute in as much as it does clarify if there is going to be a premium, which I just said a second ago, I do not support. It will require an actual physical agility test. And, I would say that if the union really believes as much as we do in wellness, that we wouldn't find ourselves in the situation of having to pay them overtime to take a physical agility test. And it's not just 1 hour overtime, which, you know, the test is 5 minutes, changing, getting ready for the test, about an hour, but no, we'd have to pay them a minimum of 4 hours of overtime. So I think if the union really desires wellness as much as we do for all of our employees, we will figure out a better way to do this. As I said, I've concluded, you know, personal health is an individual's responsibility, and it's not the responsibility of taxpayers. So, as I said, I want to make it crystal clear, I will not support health premiums or fitness premiums in any future collective bargaining agreements. And further, I do believe that we need to make changes to how the city handles collective bargaining, including council, when the bargaining agreements are interpreted. So some of the changes that I will be working on with the HR director, I think first and foremost, we must require note takers at all city bargaining sessions. We need an accurate record of what transpires at bargaining sessions so we can readily defend our position when the union files grievances. Second, we need more involvement by city council when the collective bargaining agreements are interpreted. And finally, and we need more involvement from the city attorney's office in crafting the collective bargaining agreements. At a minimum, we need the city attorneys who will be defending in an arbitration reviewing these agreements before council approves them. So I do plan to work on the HR with the HR director and my council colleagues in the future to ensure these changes before we enter into another round of collective bargaining. And again, as I said, I appreciate Commissioner Leonard's efforts, but I am opposed to any pay premiums for fitness, period. No.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. We'll now consider time certain, or not a time certain. It is rather resolution, item number 115.
Request an adjustment to the city's compliance schedule for the uncovered finished drinking water reservoir requirements of the federal long-term 2 enhanced surface water treatment rule.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mayor, or good morning, I should say, and thank you, Mayor Adams. The Water Bureau has been working under a compliance schedule with the federal government as a result of a federal rule known as LT2, which requires that all public water systems be treated and be covered. We are on the final stages of what we believe is a successful effort to receive a variance from having to treat the water. We anticipate receiving that variance. We have been working under an agreement that we were required to develop with the federal government on the covering of the reservoirs. In the meantime, the federal government has made it clear they're going to review the rule beginning this spring under which the covering of the reservoirs is required. Because our construction schedule coincides with that review, and because it is such an intensive construction schedule, and I don't mean just LT2, but on a number of capital projects that are important to the water delivery system, not the least of which is making sure that the water that's on the east side can safely be delivered to the west side, and a number of other capital improvements that are going to take a lot of the Water Bureau's resources. We are asking the federal government to give us to renegotiate essentially the agreement that we have with the EPA via the Department of Health in the state to extend out our schedule so we don't have to begin the work that we would ordinarily begin almost right now on Kelly Butte. The advantage that gives us is to focus our resources on the capital projects that we have to do, including rebuilding the main building on Interstate that the Water Bureau does its work out of that literally could, in any kind of a seismic event, collapse. And other very specific projects that we've listed in this letter that we'll be sending to the Oregon Health Authority requesting the extension. Now, there are those that want to extend the extension beyond what we have asked for. And I want to read just from a letter that David Schaff will get into more detail of and more specifics of, but to make it clear that you cannot ask for an extension without having a basis for asking for the extension, according to the EPA, that would be restricted to projects that you're working on that will actually interfere with your ability to achieve the timeline we've agreed to. So in this letter from the EPA to Senator Merkley, in which Senator Merkley had asked for an extension of the timeline, and I'm going to quote directly from the letter from Nancy Stoner, the acting assistant administrator of the EPA, wherein she says, "The rule process review process does not provide a basis to modify the City of Portland's LT2 compliance obligations. Thus, the requirements of the LT2 rule are and will continue to be in effect through the LT2 review process. However, there may be specific facts that warrant compliance schedule adjustments. Many public water systems face multiple challenges as they manage, maintain, and operate their systems. In addition, infrastructure construction projects may also present challenges. It is entirely appropriate for a primacy agencies to evaluate these system-specific facts when evaluating a request to adjust a compliance schedule. If schedule adjustment is appropriate, the public water system should have robust interim measures in place to ensure public health protection, and those interim measures should remain in effect until that system comes into compliance with the rule. Thus, we have developed a list of very specific projects, capital projects, which we think objectively support the extension of the construction schedule we've entered into agreement. If we just say, well, we want the schedule to be extended to 2030 because that's what New York has, we don't get the extension according to the EPA, and that is not in our interest. So the staff, I've had the staff working diligently for some months now, putting together what I think is a very, very defensible package to give to the Oregon Health Authority to give us the longest extension possible that is justifiable by the standards that the EPA has said would be considered in extending a schedule. So having said that, I want to...
Can I ask just a clarifying question? So in New York's initial successful efforts in this regard, were they also required by the EPA to do the same thing, or is it a different situation?
New York already has a schedule that doesn't require them to begin work on covering their main reservoir until 2027. And the reason that the EPA gave them, and you're going to hear more of this in much more detail than I'm giving you now, I'm giving you the overview. The reason New York was given till 2027 is because, for an example, they have agreed to and are building a treatment facility. Of treatment facility, we are on the edge of getting a variance from having to build. The infrastructure requirements that are necessary to build the treatment facility and other very specific projects they identified at the EPA prohibit them from actually beginning to cover the reservoir that they don't have to begin work on until 2027 because of that work. Our situation isn't exactly like theirs, but we do have projects that, while they may not be as large as the project that New York is working on, does limit our ability to be able to begin covering the reservoirs according to the compliance schedule that we've already agreed to with the EPA.
Thank you.
And I do have a replacement.
I believe that's what I handed out earlier.
Yes.
Are you moving the as a substitute?
Yes, I am.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Here. Yeah. Okay.
Is everyone up here?
Yeah. They all have.
And what's different in the substitute than from the original?
Essentially, one year longer.
1 year
than
longer.
What the original. The original resolution.
So I'm seconding it for the purpose of having a resolution before us that we can then
moved and seconded. Can you? Any other highlights of changes other than that? That was the singular change. Okay, any council discussion on the motion to substitute? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to substitute?
Fritz?
The other companion change is specified, reflecting a December 31st, 2017 start date. So setting out clearly that we won't be doing anything on planning for this until beginning of 2018. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. We're now considering the substituted resolution. Commissioner Leonard.
Director Schaff.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau. With me is Mike Stewart, chief engineer of the Water Bureau. Commissioner Leonard gave a very broad outline of the resolution and what our intent is. I'm going to give a little more detailed outline with some specificity about our approach and how we've modeled it after the successful New York approach in getting an extension on their reservoir. So as you know, LT2 requires that uncovered finished drinking water reservoirs either be covered or treated at their outlet for Giardia, Cryptosporidium, and viruses to protect public health. We have requested multiple times and received multiple responses from the EPA and the Oregon Health Authority that have each said that no variance is available for the uncovered reservoir requirement of LT2 and that the City of Portland and all other public water systems in the country must comply with that rule. In February of 2009, when we were in the process of putting together the original schedule that was required to be adopted by April 1 of 2009, the EPA said the following, quote, "The EPA cannot approve a schedule that provides for any unreasonable delays. EPA can only approve a schedule under which Portland begins taking immediate steps toward compliance with the open reservoir components of LT2. The schedule needs to show that you will work steadily and consistently toward compliance," close quotes. As you know, we received approval of our compliance schedule from the EPA on March 27, 2009, just a few days before the deadline. Fast forward to last year, and in August of 2011, the EPA issued a letter to Senator Schumer from New York declaring that the EPA would be reviewing, as Randy said, the LT2 rule expeditiously and that alternative compliance options for the uncovered reservoir requirements of the rule would be considered in that review. As a result, I think that came out on a Friday. The following Monday and over the next couple of weeks, the Water Bureau, the City Council, and Oregon's congressional delegation all responded with requests to the Oregon Health Authority and to the EPA asking that they give Portland the same opportunity as New York City to benefit from the EPA's review of the LT2 rule and the alternative compliance options that might become available. In December 9th, the Oregon Health Authority responded to our request for an indefinite suspension, and they quoted the EPA, or they included with that an email from Cynthia Doherty, the head of the Drinking Water Division for the EPA, that said the following. "There may be specific articulable facts that warrant schedule compliance." She repeats herself. "Schedule compliance, schedule adjustments. The primacy agencies can evaluate these system-specific issues when evaluating a request to adjust a compliance schedule. If a schedule adjustment is appropriate, the public water system should have robust interim measures in place to ensure public health protection, and those measures should remain in effect until that system comes into compliance with the rule." Yesterday, we received a copy of the EPA's response to our congressional delegation's letter, similar to the one that we sent to OHA asking for an extension. Commissioner Leonard read the heart of that letter, but there are a couple of paragraphs that I'd like to include. "The EPA will conduct a thorough review of the LT2 rule. As part of the review, EPA will assess and analyze new data and information regarding occurrences, treatment, analytical methods, health effects, and risk from crypto Sporidium, Giardia, and viruses to evaluate whether there are new or additional ways to mitigate, to manage risk while assuring equivalent or improved public health protection. Science will drive our ultimate decision. We intend to hold a public meeting in the spring of 2012 to present and discuss new information related to uncovered finished water reservoirs. The City of Portland is encouraged to participate and to present any information at that meeting, which the EPA will be happy to consider as part of its regulatory review process. EPA looks forward to continuing to work with the City of Portland and other stakeholders as we move forward in this review process. And then they go on to the paragraph that Commissioner Leonard read. And just one little excerpt from the from this letter to go. In the 1970s, there were an estimated 700 uncovered reservoirs in the United States. In 2006, at the time the LT2 rule was promulgated, the number of uncovered reservoirs has been reduced to 81. Since then, public water systems have taken steps to cover, decommission, or treat the water before distributing it to consumers at an additional 38 reservoirs. Today, only 43 uncovered finished water reservoirs are still in use, all of which are under enforceable schedules to meet the LT2's rules, cover, or treat requirements. We're five of those 43 reservoirs. This is a similar letter that the EPA wrote to the mayor of Rochester, New York, back in December. So a lot of things have been changing, and as a result, we believe we should be able to take advantage of that new guidance from the EPA and submit a request for a revised schedule. So that brings us to today's resolution. In response to the December direction, we, the Water Bureau, have identified key projects that, when combined with those required under LT2, create potential risks, added risks to the water supply, if we don't complete them prior to our reservoir projects. Completing construction of these projects will ensure necessary operational flexibility, reduce the potential supply risks with having the reservoirs out of service for extended periods of time, and still reflect Portland's commitment to, quote, work steadily and consistently toward compliance, close quote, as required by the EPA and the Oregon Health Authority. As the resolution states, circumstances have changed since our current compliance schedule was submitted for approval, and a schedule adjustment would address the risks that we've identified by enabling proper sequencing of capital projects, providing greater ongoing reliability of supply, and moderating the rate increases that are needed to pay for those infrastructure improvements. So the projects we've identified include the following: Bull Run Dam 2 Towers. It's in design now with construction to begin within the year and complete in fiscal year ending 2015. The Fulton Pump Station, which is in design now with construction to begin within the year and complete in fiscal year ending 2015. The Sam Jackson Pump Station, it's in design next year with construction to be complete in fiscal year 2015. The Willamette River Crossing. We have six crossings underneath the Willamette River, none of which are built to current seismic standards. That is a significant vulnerability to our west side supply. We would propose to begin design this year with construction to be completed in the fiscal year 2017. Powell Butte 2 construction is already underway to be completed in 2015. Our interstate facility, as Commissioner Leonard mentioned, construction to begin this year with completion in 2015, and the city's Emergency Coordination Center, which we are a partner of and which we will own about half of, construction to begin this year with completion in 2013. As you can tell, we've got our hands full even without those reservoir projects. The proposed schedule adjustment will also moderate the proposed rate increases, which are in this year's financial plan, and we have existing robust interim measures in place to ensure public health protection. So our proposal is based very loosely on the model that New York successfully used to achieve in a recent extension in their compliance program. Now, you may already know this, but New York had originally six open reservoirs. Four of those have been taken out of service or replaced with covered storage. One is undergoing improvement now in conjunction with construction of a filtration plant, and the remaining one is Hillview. New York successfully argued that it must first construct three significant capital projects and then make significant upgrades at Hillview to the reservoir itself before it could safely construct a cover and avoid the significant risk to their ability to reliably deliver safe drinking water to their customers. Now, those three projects alone are in the neighborhood of $5 billion of investment, a UV plant, a filtration plant, and an aqueduct. And they have a total of $10 billion in capital projects underway. Now, that eclipses all of the work we're doing and the expenses we're going to be seeing. They're a much bigger system than we are, but Hillview Reservoir is a much bigger reservoir than any of ours. They're covering that Hillview Reservoir is a $1.6 billion project in today's dollars. Who knows what it's going to be in 2034. So, as part of their proposal, New York recognized that it had to assure the regulators that deferral would not pose an increased risk to public health, and they committed to continuing a watershed protection program to protect Hillview's source water, a disease surveillance program, and a risk mitigation program, including some enhancements during that deferral period. We intend to make similar arguments and commitments along those lines. And that's the task that Randy set us to just after we received that December 9th communication from OHA. Our goal was to have it completed by yesterday. We're a little behind that, but my sense is that we'll have that letter to OHA within the next week and a half. Our proposal will be to seek the same opportunity as New York to benefit from the EPA's review of the LT2 rule and any alternative compliance options that become available. If you approve this resolution, we'll be submitting that formal request to the Health Authority to extend our uncovered reservoir compliance schedule for LT2 that reflects a December 31st, 2017 start date, as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, and a June 30, 2026 completion date for all of the projects. That will move Kelly Butte completion from 2014 to 2021, the Tabor project from 2015 to 2024, and the Washington Park project from 2020 to 2026. Gives the Portland Water Bureau, the council, ratepayers an opportunity to take a big step back, take a deep breath, before having to move forward on these projects. I'd be glad to answer any questions, if you have any.
I guess just one question. So, the key projects that you just listed.
Mm-hmm.
So were these key projects before we decided to delay the schedule? I mean, some
of these projects are projects we have pushed out because of LT2. The Sam Jackson Pump Station is a project that got pushed out because of the LT2 projects. The Willamette River Crossing is a project that had been on our financial plan and got pushed out. The other projects are projects that we had in our financial plan that we intended to do, and we have said, well, doing all of those, keeping all these balls up in the air, and taking these create a risk. Now, it was a risk that we were prepared to take on until the EPA said, you know, there are challenges to public water systems in the country that give some leeway in making some schedule adjustments.
I just want to understand. So none of these projects are condition precedents for our compliance with the reservoir requiring them LT2. I
mean, no, we don't have
you
quite
just kind
the
of
story
up,
that
they're
that
not
New
like
York
condition
does.
Precedent. You have to do these first before you cover the reservoir.
Although, let me. I know where Mike's going.
I don't want the engineer's answer.
So let me give you though one example. The Willamette River crossing is critical. When we take the Washington Park reservoirs down in order to do this rebuilding, we have no storage on the west side. We have small tanks here and there, but we have no storage on the west side. So we've been working for years on the West Side Header Project. That's almost done. When we do that and we have the Willamette River crossing, we will feel a lot more comfortable in taking those reservoirs out of service for several years in order to do that work.
What we're trying to do is there are episodic risks that you can't control, like an earthquake, and there are episodic risks that you can control, like construction projects. And we're trying to fix it so that we do one episodic risk at a time. And I think it's reasonable and prudent and defensible. And the projects that we have here were all in our program, so someone can't accuse us of making up a program. It's
okay.
Reasonable and prudent.
I just want to clarify that we're not necessarily condition precedents to our
no.
compliance with LT2. Okay.
Other initial discussion from council? Anything else you want to add?
Nope.
All right. How many people have signed up to testify?
We have 20 people.
20 people. So you'll get 2 minutes each. If you are a lobbyist, you need to declare that you're a lobbyist. That means authorized to speak on behalf of an organization, whether that organization is business or otherwise. And we'll begin in the order that people signed up.
Okay. The first four, please come on up, are Regna Merritt, Floyd Jones, Scott Fernandez, and Olivia Schmidt. And they'll be followed by Connie Dean, Trish Dietrich, Leah Dawkins, and Kent Crayford.
Did you say 2 minutes?
Yep.
Okay.
2 minutes. We got 24 people signed up. What Floyd Jones can say really well in 3 minutes, you can say even better in two. Who'd like to begin? Who is first signed up?
I believe I was first up.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Regna Merritt. I'm here representing Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Thank you for hearing this important matter. We've made a lot of progress since August when Senator Schumer sent that fateful letter to the EPA and we got a positive response. The Citizens Alternative Resolution, which I submitted to you last night and you have before you in your packets, it's in the back, articulates that progress and ties the important this important request for an extension of timeline to a key policy decision. Such a policy resolution was requested in a letter sent to you in October of 2011 by the Portland Business Alliance, the Central East Side Industrial Council, Oregon Wild, Citizens Interest in Bull Run Bark, Coalition for a Livable Future, East Side Democratic Club, Alliance for Democracy, Food and Water Watch, 28 neighborhood associations, the Sierra Club or Columbia Chapter, Friends of the Reservoir, Portland Water Users Coalition, and Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. So we've been looking for an opportunity to update and the city policy since October. We believe that we can get to a win-win today by modifying the existing Portland Water Bureau proposal and adopting the principles and the language of the Citizens Alternative Resolution. The documents that are before you lay out, we've taken language that's almost verbatim from the letter sent by the congressional delegation to the EPA supporting their efforts on behalf of the city since October 13th. There's language taken straight from the federal legislative agenda that's incorporated into it. There is language that is drawn loosely from a letter submitted by one of the experts in infectious disease in the country. You have a letter from Dr. Thomas Ward there. And in short, we really want that to see that you extend the timeline to not have projects not start before 2020. While it's not in this proposal, we know that the promulgation of the last rule was delayed by about 4 years. So we don't think we're risking anything by it's not starting till 2020. And I fear that if we push it out only the 1 year that was proposed today, we're going to be back here in November talking about the 5-year CIP that includes design for Kelly Butte. The other thing, that this resolution is going to be identified in the future by future generations and by the congressional delegation tomorrow as the council direction. and it needs to be unambiguous about avoidance strategy. It needs to direct the Portland Water Bureau to do what it's already doing, reference the work, those documents I've submitted with the legislative agenda and supported by you in the January meeting. And it also needs to direct the Water Bureau to do what they're not doing, which is to put together a scientific document that supports the progress we've made.
Ms. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Jones?
Yes. Floyd Jones. I'm with Friends of the Reservoirs, and we support a policy of avoidance. We, too, have submitted alternative, friendly alternative amendments to the resolution with the changes being a time frame of 2025 to 2034. I want to emphasize that New York's delay schedule was not wholly reliant on construction schedules by any means. They submitted a 160-page scientific data document that supported that date. They also made economic arguments, and economic arguments are not precluded by the letter to Mayor Richards and Portland and other utilities. EPA failed to conduct any cost-benefit analysis for reservoirs unlike source water. So economic justification can be made. We've had a 55% rate increase since June of 2008, over 150% in the last 10 years. So we can make those arguments. And good governance says that we need to push it out even further. I mean, if we were going just in support of good governance, we'd push it out to 2050. But 2034 is reasonable. When we make all of the arguments, we need to submit the scientific data document that New York did in 2008, which they supplemented to EPA in 2011 in support of permanent avoidance. We need to make the economic arguments, and we have the science argument, 7,000 liters of cryptosporidium testing at the reservoirs, and we know that there'll be no benefit from treating or covering the reservoirs. And when we terminated the contract for the Tabor burial back in 2004, included in that ordinance was a directive to return the rate savings from terminating the contract and the projects to ratepayers. So that's one additional amendment that we're offering to include in the resolution today. So I'll go back to my beginning paragraph.
Thank you.
All right.
Hi, welcome.
I think it's his turn, actually.
Oh, I get to this side, but I'll let, if you want to go last, I'll let you go last.
Okay, my name is Scott Fernandez. The last 100 years, citizens of Portland have supported open reservoirs. Open reservoirs have continuously supplied safe and healthy drinking water. And I'd like to dispel the myth, open reservoirs were the source of an outbreak in 1954, as was erroneously reported earlier this week on talk radio. To quote the CDC's conclusions about the Portland situation, failure to isolate Giardia lamblia from the suspect water has strongly influenced investigators to reject drinking water as the possible vehicle of infection in the Portland incident. In summary, I'd like to say that 5 or 10-year extension is not long enough. What we need is a waiver from this LT2 regulation, a waiver that will lead to full repeal of this LT2 regulation that is scientifically flawed and unreliable methodologies that have been used. We want this thing to go away because it has no scientific basis for it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. So do we. Hi.
My name's Olivia Schmidt. I represent BARC. I'm the program director at BARC. We're the defenders of Mount Hood National Forest. And on a monthly basis, we communicate with 20,000 of our members in the Portland area. And on an annual basis, we talk with more than 50,000 households about issues like the Bull Run LT2 issue. As the defenders of Mount Hood National Forest, we identify that the Bull Run is a unique resource that Portland has. We have a natural resource that is protected by an intact, healthy ecosystem. BARC is really concerned that by implementing new filtration, new treatments, that the Bull Run Reservoir and the Bull Run area will lose protections that are preventing logging from happening in those areas, for example. We support the citizens' alternative. in hearing the concerns about making more requests for extension and the argument I just heard about the economic impact, I would argue that the EPA's reconsideration of its rules and the economic impact to Portland and the drinkers of our water is a significant reason to request further extension before we find out what those new rules may be. Anything under review is presumably open to change, and for the city to invest the amount of money we're talking about in something that's likely to be a change standard within the next few years seems foolhardy. I would also just mention that myself as a Clackamas County resident working in Portland, there is a significant difference between the water in Clackamas County and the water that we drink in Portland. The idea that any of the protections that are not assessed on Clackamas County waters from the Clackamas River, which is subject to agricultural runoff, logging impacts, it would be a shame to not be able to come into Portland anymore and drink delicious, clean, naturally healthy water. Thank you.
How are you so sure that the regulations are going to change?
My understanding is that the EPA has recognized a need to review its rule, and my assumption—
Recognized from where?
From the documents that, like the resolution, where it indicates that the EPA is reviewing its LT2 rule.
I just wanted to know if you had any other source of information besides us.
No, I'm not good buddies with the EPA, but I'm glad they're reviewing this rule because it seems inadequate.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. The next four.
Are Connie Dean, Trish Dittrich, Leah Dawkins, and Kent Crayford. And they will be followed by Tom Keenan, Dan Bourbonis, Tracy Marks, and Myron Burr.
Hi, welcome. Where are the other two? Come on up.
Connie, Trish, Leah.
Let's name two others. There.
Let's go with Tom Keenan or Dan Bourbonis.
Tom Keenan, Dan Bourbonis.
Tracy Marks or Myron Burr. How about Tom Fahey?
Tom Fahey. All right. Mr. Fahey. Another one?
Catherine Knotson.
Ms. Knotson. All right. Please begin.
Hello, my name is Leah Dawkins, and I am testifying today on behalf of the Southeast Uplift Board of Directors. Southeast Uplift echoes and supports the concerns of others testifying today. We support the work of the Friends of Reservoirs and urge council to work on this with this group and the other citizen interest groups to create a new resolution of LT2 project avoidance and extend project start dates to 2020. Given the recent success of New York City in avoiding costly construction required in order to comply with LT2 regulations, we simply ask council to follow the same path as New York City in order to avoid projects which are unnecessary for the health and safety of Portland residents, projects which will significantly raise the cost for Portland ratepayers in these exceptionally difficult economic times and waste public money continuing to work to comply with rules that are likely to be significantly revised by the Environmental Protection Agency in the coming years. Please consider the needs of the rate-paying community by not pursuing projects which will continue to drive up costs of water bills. We firmly believe that by working with other citizen interest groups on this issue, council can come up with a solution that works best for everyone in the city, allows the community appropriate public input, and does not cost another $500 million of taxpayer money. Thank you.
And what gives you hope? That working more, because I don't want to pay a penny more than we have to, and I think that I speak for everyone on council. And
what's your question?
You're saying just don't spend any money on these projects.
No, we're not suggesting that you spend no money on the projects, but we're suggesting that rather than what the bureau director is saying, that we do the projects and then take a step back and breathe right now and work on resolution around LT2 project avoidance. Do the projects that need to be done right now, okay. Seismic review, but really make a clear resolution about LT2 compliance project avoidance. So not doing any projects that need to be done. And until we have a more sure footing on what the LT2 regulations are going to look like in 2016.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate that. Ma'am?
Catherine. I'm just going to read what I have submitted. My name is Catherine Knotson. I've been a Portland resident for over 20 years. I oppose the adoption of this resolution and the substitute resolution for the OHADWP LT2 Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule Reservoir Compliance Schedule Extension Request. I oppose requesting a reservoir compliance schedule for the Mount Tabor Park reservoirs and the Washington Park reservoirs from 2015 to 2023 and 2020 to 2025, or even with the substitute resolution putting it farther out. On November 28, 1969, the Portland City Council was told to cover their open distribution reservoirs due to bird fecal contamination by Dr. Edward Press of the Oregon State Board of Health. The City Council adopted Resolution 31165 on December 27, 1972, to cover the open distribution reservoirs, one every biennium over a period of 12 years to be completed by 1984-1985. The City Council rescinded this resolution with the Resolution 31807 on December 29, 1976. Cryptosporidium became a known human pathogen the first half of 1976. The City Council and the Water Bureau are too presumptuous, assuming they will receive the OHADWP LT2 Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule 10-year treatment variance for the Bull Run Watershed surface source water, in spite of the fact Cryptosporidium was detected at the intake pipe on December 30, 2011. I was told the ultraviolet light treatment plant was, quote, put on the shelf, unquote, and that the 25-million-gallon Kelly Butte replacement reservoir will not be constructed beginning July 1, 2012, but will be delayed until 2017. I had not seen a copy of the substitute resolution until this morning. There is no legitimate construction project sequencing requirements that must be done before Kelly Butte reservoir is constructed or before the open distribution reservoirs are disconnected and decommissioned. You are adopting this resolution only because a small group of citizens are demanding you do so at their behest. You have catered to their demands since May 29, 2002, to the detriment of the entire citizenry of Portland. OHP, DWP, and US EPA and its predecessors have been telling the Portland Water Bureau and the City Council for 42 years to cover the open distribution reservoirs. This is documented in the Portland Archives and Records Center, the OHP, DWP, and US EPA public records. There should not be any more delays with completely complying with LT2, Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule, by April 1, 2014.
Up, I need you to wrap up.
One quote. Quote, those who don't remember the past are condemned to repeat it, unquote. Don't make the same mistake by delaying the Water Bureau's complete compliance with LT2, Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. We appreciate it. Hi, welcome back.
Good morning. My name is Kent Crayford. I'm here representing the Portland Water Users Coalition. We're a group of 17 large industrial and commercial water customers in the city, representing thousands of living wage jobs. And I want to make a couple points this morning. First, I want to strongly endorse the comments of the community representatives who have proposed this alternative resolution. We also support those. This resolution, these are friendly amendments that simply seek to clarify the city's policy on LT2. We've all discussed it. We're all in agreement, as the mayor said earlier, that these projects could and should be pushed out, that they're unnecessary, that if we can avoid them, we should. We now have the opportunity to avoid them. We should, but that takes work. And what it takes is the Portland Water Bureau working at every opportunity to try and pursue an outcome that allows Portland to get out from under this unnecessary mandate. Unfortunately, we've missed too many of those opportunities. We've watched the city of New York pursue all opportunities, and they've succeeded. And we are able to hitch our wagon to theirs, and that's great. But what we really need to do is get more aggressive and be alongside New York, not behind them. And so we ask you to support these amendments to the resolution. They simply confirm what you've already directed your Office of Government Relations to do, and we strongly supported that and appreciate your efforts to direct the city lobbyist to work with the delegation and the Obama administration and the EPA
to pursue this policy of avoidance. We ask that you simply affirm that policy here today and direct the Water Bureau to do the same. Secondly, I just want to mention, I think it would be a lost opportunity if we didn't take this delay and convert it into meaningful rate relief. The projects that are being substituted on the five-year CRP are not necessary to get the reservoir projects done. The sequencing is not critical, as Commissioner Salzman requested. They're simply putting a new project in place of where an old one was. That's unnecessary.
Thank you.
Let's lower the rates. Thank you.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Myron Burr. I'm with Celtronic Corporation. As you may know, Celtronic is a Portland business with nearly 800 employees. We have been